crashed over the fence I'd been climbing, giving the fluttering feeling inside of me wings. Wings on fire, flying all over my body in a degree of pleasure that had me lingering on the border of unconsciousness as I sank further and further into wave after wave of pure, unadulterated pleasure I never wanted to end. My pussy tightened around Preppy, holding him still with one last chokehold I never wanted him to escape from. "So fucking... ugh!" Preppy roared, and with one final thrust he pulled out of me, and I felt the loss, my pussy clenching at nothing but the space he'd filled. He spread my ass cheeks with one hand, and I turned my head just in time to watch him take his cock in his hand, stroking himself as he spurt hot streams of white directly into my most private of places. Preppy groaned as he watched his cum drip from my ass over my swollen pussy. His groaning, his sounds of pleasure, sounds that I caused, was like music, a song I never wanted to end. The train passed, leaving an echo of screeching metal in its wake. Preppy flipped me over and collapsed on top of me, between my still-spread legs. His cock resting over my pussy, still pulsing against me as he recovered from his own orgasm.
"Your pussy,"
Preppy said, trying to catch his breath. He was hunched over my body with his chin resting between my breasts, looking up at me through eyelashes so long it wasn't fair for them to be on a man.
"Fuck. It's so fucking good,"
he muttered, thrusting against me with his still hard yet softening cock like he couldn't get enough. Preppy may not have been able to keep me, but I'd been wrong on the other account. Because after that night, there was no denying that he owned me. Chapter 25. Dre.
"Tell me about Connor. Tell me why he didn't deserve what I did to him."
I rolled away, but he grabbed my shoulder and rolled me back.
"Tell me, and I promise if I can help take away that hurt, I will,"
he said, in a moment of sweetness that surprised me. And I was tired of living with the burden. As much as I didn't want to ever recall what happened in my head, never mind speak it out loud, the words just started to flow. "My dad's just a regular guy. He was always kind of lost. He's an engineer, but never stayed with the same firm for too long, a few years at most. Then he found Jan, and everything changed. They got married, and he was happy again. Jan wasn't my most favorite person, but I guess stepmoms never are. But she was nice enough, and she made him smile. That's all that mattered. What I liked best was who she brought with her."
"Who?"
Preppy asked, tracing lazy circles around my belly button. "My stepsister, Amelia. I called her Melly. That's who I was writing the letter to. I really wasn't trying to kill myself, just unburden my soul. After the cemetery and Connor and everything, I didn't know what to do, so I just started writing."
"You said you don't have anyone. Why didn't you try calling her?"
"I can't," I admitted, choking down a sob. "She's dead." Preppy nodded in understanding.
"People die, Doc."
"They do," I said, inhaling a shaky, deep breath. "But she's the only person I've killed." And before I could convince myself that it was a bad idea, I was rubbing the scar on the side of my face, and I was telling Preppy the story that's haunted me since the day it happened. The story that started and ended it all. "I don't drive. I never learned how. Well, I never finished learning. My stepsister, she was older. She was 18 and just about to leave for college. She was going to be gone. She didn't need to be nice to me. She didn't even need to see me, really. We were only going to be living together in the same house for a few months. She was pretty. Tall, blonde, huge blue eyes. She turned down modeling contracts because she wanted to focus on her education. She wanted to be a doctor. Not just any doctor, but one of the ones that traveled to other countries and treat people without access to medical care. She was a good person. And that's what makes this all so much worse. If she was a bad person, someone like me, then maybe it wouldn't be so bad, but it is, and every day it hurts more, even though they say it's supposed to hurt less. I'd just gotten my driver's permit. My dad was supposed to take me driving that Saturday, but he called and couldn't make it. Work stuff. When Melly saw how disappointed I was, she volunteered to take me. We went to this abandoned parking lot next to the highway. She was so patient, and I was such a brat. But then I got the hang of it, or so I thought I did. We sang along to the radio and must have gone around that damn parking lot 100 times. We were almost out of gas. I put the car in park and reached for the handles so we could switch and go get gas. Melly said that it was close and I could drive. I should have said no. I was nervous. I pulled out onto the road without looking, and a car hit the passenger side. It didn't even feel hard, but when I looked over, Melly's head was all awkward and she was bleeding from her mouth. The car isn't even what killed her. It was the airbags. Freak accident. But if she was driving, it would have never happened. It was all my fault. Our parents got divorced a few months after she died. My dad tried to keep a positive attitude, but he couldn't. Neither could I. He rarely ever came home early from work, and I stayed out all hours of the night doing whatever I could get my hands on that would help me forget. Soon, a bunch of kids I was hanging out with suggested a road trip. There was a ton of us that piled into this van and headed south. But after a few months, the drugs grew stronger, and the party was over for everyone but Connor and me. The rest of them went back to their lives, and I just couldn't. I mean, I tried a few times, but every time I was about to get on a bus or a plane or hitchhike, I just couldn't. Connor, you wanted to know why I wanted you to keep him alive. Connor was Melly's boyfriend. They met when they were in kindergarten and were inseparable. He couldn't cope, and neither could I, and I guess I let him rough me up and toss me around because I felt like I needed to be punished for what I'd done. I needed to make it up to him. And in my mind, there was nothing he could do to me that I didn't deserve. Until it was all too much, and I took my dad's final offer and the bus ticket. That's when I met you on the tower. I stayed because I felt like I deserved it. Plus, he funded this little adventure. Well, at first he did, until his credit cards were all maxed out. That's when we started forging or stealing or doing whatever to buy more drugs. I kept saying yes. Not because I wanted to keep going, but because of the guilt.
It's bullshit, you know,
Preppy said, pulling me back to the present. I was shocked at how easily the story had flowed out of me. Guilt doesn't feel like bullshit. It feels like a rock on my chest. It hurts like it's real. Preppy looked at me, studying me with intensity. He turned away and muttered something I couldn't quite make out. But if I had to guess, it sounded very similar to,
I fucking know the feeling.
Chapter 26. Present. Preppy. Looky here, I said, snapping my fingers. It's the fucking bellboy. Has my luggage arrived? That question was met with a blow to my jaw that rattled around in my head before everything went black. When I woke up with a headache that 70 party patches couldn't cure, I heard whispers on the other side of the wall. Female whispers. Is someone there? I asked.
Yes, I'm here,
a meek voice responded. Who are you? I managed to ask as I set myself upright.
Nobody. That's why I'm here.
Nice to meet you, nobody. I'm Samuel Clearwater. My friends call me Preppy.
I know who you are.
Well then, this is a fun game. You know me, but I don't know you, I said, letting my head fall back against the wall.
It's better if you don't.
It would also be better if I weren't in some biker's homemade torture chamber, but we can't all get what we fucking want, now can we? She sounded better off than me, her voice clearer, although not by much.
Are you always so comfortable around other people?
The feminine voice asked, reminding me of the question Dre had asked when I'd taken her to Billy's place.
Is your glass always half full, even in here?
I laughed and then coughed. Lady, right now my cup is half dead, so stop shitting on my parade and take your torture and rape like a fucking man.
Why do you think you're here? Why do you think he's doing this to you?
Shits and giggles?
Power. He could have killed you, he could have let you die, but he let your friends think you're dead and keeps you teetering on the edge of life and death because he loves power above all else. What better way to gain power than to take control of the lives of others? Besides, now every time Abel pisses him off, he can come in here and beat on his friend or kill you or torture you. But that's up to him. That's what he feeds off of.
And here I just thought he was a sadist and went and jerked off with a belt around his neck after he delivered his beatings.
No. When he's done, he comes over to this side of the wall and he rapes me.
See? Shits and giggles. I was totally right, I said. And for the first time in however long, the voice on the other side actually laughed. Preppy 1, Lady Chop Rapes on the other side of the wall, 0.
I think I might like you, Samuel Clearwater, she said.
I don't think I care for you at all, whoever the fuck you are.
Chapter 27, Dre. Myrna made it through the next 2 days, and the assisted living facility called, with an opening, so arrangements were made to transfer her via ambulance to Sarasota, which was about an hour drive away. When Preppy told me we had to go somewhere, I thought it had something to do with Myrna's paperwork, or the documents I'd started on but hadn't finished, for King's file. What exactly are we doing here? I asked, as Preppy pulled up to a small store with a neon sign in the window that flashed, "Everything is $1," over and over again in different colors. I could still feel the effects of my orgasm pulsing inside of my body, like my core was searching for more. I crossed and uncrossed my legs, the unease I felt growing greater the closer our proximity.
You'll see, Preppy said. Stay here.
He tossed me a wink and jumped out of the car before I could respond. He was only in the store for a minute or two, before he came back out with a large black bucket, which he placed in the trunk. When he got back in the car, he tossed me a bag. Something cold chilled my legs through the thin plastic. Hot dogs? I asked, pulling out a generic package of hot dogs marked Miscellaneous Meat Product. A star-shaped gold sticker over the label advertised its $1 price tag, like the flashing sign still wasn't enough.
Yup, hot dogs,
Preppy said, turning onto a side road between the trees covering the road sign. What exactly is miscellaneous meat product? I asked, turning the package over and finding another curious label warning that the hot dogs may contain peanuts. Is this our lunch? Because I have to say I don't even think that you can eat these, I said, feeling my stomach turn at the thought.
They're actually not bad. When I was a kid, I survived on those things,
Preppy said with a smile, surprisingly not like it was a bad memory to recall, but one he looked back on fondly. My stomach flipped again, but not because of the hot dogs, but because I realized how awful my remark had sounded. I'm sorry, I didn't mean... I started. I can't wait to try one.
No,
Preppy said, laughing so hard he had to hold his stomach.
First of all, Don't pity my past. My past made me who I am, and I love my life. Second, I should have been more clear. These aren't for us to eat, although they do have something to do with lunch. I stared at him, waiting for him to give me more, but all he did was smile. I have no idea what that means, I admitted.
Well,
he said, parking the car where the small road was cut off by a wall of trees.
You're about to find out. Bring the hot dogs,
Preppy said, opening the trunk and pulling out his bucket and another bag I hadn't noticed before. I followed him through a maze of brush, glad that I'd changed my clothes as he suggested. Preppy turned and grabbed my hand and tugged me through a small opening onto a huge dock and seawall that had seen better days. It looked as if it had been abandoned for years, left to rot under the Florida sun. It's beautiful, I said, and I truly meant it. Even with parts of it heavily coated with layers of barnacles and other parts falling back down into the salty water, it had an eerie sense of beauty about it, almost like I could imagine how it used to look with a long pier stretching out into the water. The pillars where the boats would dock were far apart, so I could only imagine what kind of large boats were parked there at one time. This must have been some place, I said. Preppy set down the bucket and rope. He let go of my hand, but only to spin me in the opposite direction of the water, up to where a large yellow three-story house was peeking above a fence overgrown with grass and weeds. It was in the same shape as the dock, windows boarded with rotting wood, siding streaked in dirt, runoff from the constant afternoon summer rains.
Wow,
was all I could manage to say.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking great, right? It was built in the 1920s,
Preppy said.
It was abandoned ever since I could remember. Kids used to dare each other to spend the night inside because rumor was that it was haunted or a witch lives there or some shit. It was always changing. Anyways, a few years back, when anyone and their Aunt Tilly thought they could make money in the Florida real estate market, a developer bought it to demolish it and turn it into canal-front condos. But the market went belly up, and it's just sat here rotting ever since.
It would be a shame to tear it down. She just needs some work, I said, shielding my eyes from the sun. I could only see from the second story and up behind the brush, but if I squinted hard enough, I could almost see what the home looked like at one time. Wrap-around balconies where families could sit and have lunch overlooking the water or entertain guests. A sitting area or reading room making up the entire third-story loft area, lit only with natural sunlight in the evenings.
That it is. There isn't anything like this around here anymore.
Who do you think lived here?
I'm not sure. But Thomas Edison and Henry Ford had winter places not too far from here. So maybe someone who brushed shoulders with that crowd. It's definitely possible.
Wow. There is a lot of history in this town. I never knew that. Slowly, I felt myself falling back in love with Logan's Beach.
This town is not exactly historical, although historical might fit just fine.
I was still staring up at the house, imagining the boats that must have docked there, and the parties the original owners must have had. It was a true piece of southern perfection, like a southern belle with a dirty dress.
One thing is for sure,
Preppy said. I turned around to find him tying off small hooks to the end of each of the nylon ropes.
Whoever lived here, they probably weren't the type to do this.
What exactly is this? I asked.
I'm taking you for lunch. Sort of,
he said, opening the pack of hot dogs and breaking off pieces to set on the end of each of the hooks.
But we have to catch it first.
Preppy dropped the hook in the water slowly.
Gotta make sure it's on the bottom,
he explained, tying off the line at the top of one of the pillings, then repeating the process with the other three ropes. What are we catching? I asked, whispering, like whatever was on the menu could hear us and be spooked by our voices. I stepped up to the end of the dock and glanced down into the murky water, where I couldn't see anything but brown.
You'll see.
One of the ropes started moving, and that's when I realized that whatever Preppy was catching, it wasn't fish, because the line didn't just dart away like it was eaten by a fish, but rather looked like it was walking away.
Here.
Preppy moved me in front of him so that his chest was to my back. He held up the line in front of his body for me to take, so I did. But he didn't move away, just bent over so his chin was resting on my shoulder.
The trick is to pull it up slowly,
he said, his breath tickling my ear. I tried to concentrate, but I could feel his body, his nearness. It was like a low vibration or whistle that no one else could pick up on but me, and it was so close I had to bite my lip to keep myself from pushing back against him.
Slowly,
he repeated, dragging me back to the task at hand. I did as he said, crossing my hands over one another, pulling up the rope like Preppy had showed me. Preppy stepped back for a moment, appearing again by my side with the bucket. He crouched down just as a face appeared just below the surface of the water, staring back up at me. The face of a crab.
Now don't move, or you'll scare him,
Preppy whispered out of the side of his mouth, still as a statue.
The second you get him above the water, that's when you have to move him over to the bucket as fast as you can, before he's let go and drops back into the water.
For the sake of staying still, I didn't answer.
You can talk,
Preppy whispered, trying not to laugh. Oh yeah, got it, I whispered. Even slower than before, I raised the rope until the crab was free of the water. I quickly whipped the rope over the bucket, but a little too eagerly because Preppy had to dodge getting hit by the crab, who released his hold on the hot dog just a tad earlier than I expected him to. Preppy set the bucket back onto the seawall, and I glanced inside at the blue crab, who was only a little larger than the palm of my hand. He circled the bottom of the bucket, snapping at the plastic walls with his claws.
Wow, how did you learn to do that?
I asked, looking down at my achievement with wonderment, as he snapped at the air with his claws. Preppy didn't immediately answer, so when I looked up to the other side of the bucket, I found him staring at me, his mouth partly open.
Preppy?
I asked, my voice sounding scratchy and rough.
Oh,
he said, coming back from wherever he'd gone.
This guy King and I used to sell weed to when we were kids taught us. There was one summer we ate so much of these fuckers we had to stop when we realized we started to smell like them too.
He said with a laugh, recalling the memory. They're so small, I pointed out. Hardly seems like enough for two growing boys.
It's not. That's why we need more,
Preppy said, yanking me by the hand back to the end of the dock. We caught seven of them before Preppy declared that was enough for our lunch. We drove to what looked like an abandoned shack in the middle of similar-looking shacks in the middle of the causeway. The smell of freshly fried seafood wafted from the little building, making my stomach growl.
Hungry?
Preppy asked, guiding us into the small space which only held a few mismatched tables and an old Pepsi cooler.
Starving, you?
I asked, surprised when we didn't take a seat. Preppy pushed past the counter into an even tinier back room, where a large man with silver hair was standing over a pot.
Preppy, my good man, what do you have for me?
He asked, taking the bucket from Preppy's arms.
The gift of crabs,
Preppy announced. The man chuckled and set the bucket on the ground next to the stove.
This might be the only time when crabs make a good gift, he said. You want them the usual way?
You got it,
Preppy said, tugging me by the hand out the back door.
Oh, and this is Dre.
He called back my last-minute introduction.
That's Billy. Like Dr. Dre?
Billy asked.
Yep, she has a sister named Snoop,
Preppy said, opening the creaking screen door. We sat on yellow chairs at the single rickety patio set that looked like it had been rotting in the sun for quite some time. Preppy leaned in closer like he was studying me.
What are you doing?
I asked, leaning back from his intense glare.
Trying to figure you out.
Huh? Me? Why?
Preppy pointed to my face.
You have these huge eyes, and although they're dark as hell, they're still bright somehow. You got seriously black hair, so black it's almost blue, but your skin is only slightly tannish. What are you? Some flavor of Spanish? Oh, I got it. A little Asian? No, that's not it. Caribbean Islander, maybe. Barbados, Antigua, Narnia.
I shook my head. Narnia? That's not even a real place. It's fiction.
Have you ever been there?
Preppy challenged. No.
Then how can you be so sure?
I guess I can't be.
I rest my case.
I laughed. Well, real or not, I'm not Narnian. My mom's background is English, if you go way back, and my dad's side is French-Canadian. Preppy slid his sunglasses down his nose.
So, you be a white chick then?
Like, I totally be a white chick. Preppy sighed.
Bummer. Here I thought we were all interracial and shit.
Disappointing, I know.
The struggle is real.
After a few moments of comfortable silence, Preppy spoke first.
What are you thinking about over there, Doc? I can see your wheels turning.
I shrugged. You're just always so comfortable. Around everyone. You know, when you're not threatening me or trying to teach me a lesson or dragging me around somewhere.
And?
He asked, swallowing hard. And I was wondering how someone in your line of work can be so relaxed all the time.
And what line of work is that?
Preppy asked, leaning in toward me and grinning like he was up to something. You know, dealing the drugs, I said, wincing when my sentence came out as awkward as I felt.
Well, Doc, I can tell you that, although I deal in the drugs, the reason I look so comfortable is because I am.
Don't you have enemies? Business deals gone bad? I mean, you carry a gun, so you have to be worried about something.
You've seen too many movies, Doc. Although sometimes I do have to use it for more than putting it to your head while I make you come.
Preppy said. I blushed.
It's because I carry a gun that I'm not worried.
He looked out over the water. A rusted shrimp boat was slowly pulling up to the dock. One man jumped off onto the dock, while another shouted instructions and tossed him a rope. The gentle breeze blew Preppy's sandy blonde locks around the top of his head. He turned back to me.
And you're wrong, you know.
About what?
I'm not always 100% comfortable around everyone,
he said, locking eyes with me.
There is this one person. This girl who I think...
Just then, Billy pushed open the door.
Hot plate,
he announced, setting down a huge platter of newly steamed crabs in the center of the table. The platter actually wasn't a platter at all, I realized, but an upside-down lid of a metal garbage can. What's that amazing smell? I asked, leaning in over the crabs and inhaling the spicy, sweet scent coming off the crabs that were still steaming.
Old Bay seasoning. It's great on any kind of shellfish. I make my own version of it. It's my secret ingredient,
Billy said.
Billy, I hate to be the one to tell you this, but when you tell everyone about it, it's not much of a secret anymore. And copying a name brand isn't exactly an original creation.
Billy smacked Preppy on the shoulder with his rag.
Touché, my friend, he said with a burst of laughter.
He placed his hand on the back of Preppy's chair.
Listen, I wanted to thank you for helping me get the stoves working again. I'd be cooking blue crabs under a bridge right now if it wasn't for you making that call and getting me those stoves.
They shook hands and did the secret handshake all men seemed to know, the one that ended with a half-hug and a clap on the back.
Couldn't have my favorite chef without a kitchen. Who would feed me?
Oh, I don't know, maybe one of the dozen old ladies who make you whatever you want.
Maybe Grace. Maybe one of the biker whores.
Billy said with a smirk. He turned to me.
Sorry about the language, ma'am.
I mean, the ladies that are associated with the Beach Bastards.
No worries, I said, deciding right then and there that I liked Billy.
Dude, I wouldn't do you wrong like that,
Preppy said.
None of them make seafood like you do. Nobody.
Preppy reached for the crab with his hands and set one on a plate, handing it across the table to me. Billy gave him a knowing look.
So, are we cool?
Preppy asked, adding,
It's not you, it's me.
He held up his arms in surrender as Billy swatted him again with a dish towel. He thanked Preppy again and headed back inside, whistling along to a staticky version of the Billy Joel song, playing through the small radio on the floor, where it was also keeping the door propped open.
I almost forgot to give you these, Billy said.
The door swung open and he tossed two plastic yellow crab crackers over my head and onto the table. I'd successfully ripped off the first leg of my crab and was doing my best with the cracker to rid my lunch of his shell when I looked up to find myself locked in Preppy's intense stare. This looks so great, doesn't it? I asked, trying to break the thickness of the air between us. Preppy remained silent as he lifted a crab off the platter and set it on his plate. Then he made a show of lifting two very familiar fingers to his mouth to slowly suck the seasoning off, just like he had before. My panties dampened instantly. I held back a groan and cleared my throat, turning my attentions back to my plate. Are you hungry? I asked shakily, trying to sound unaffected as my nipples pebbled through my shirt. As if on cue, Preppy's gaze dropped to my chest, lingering there, like he was admiring what he'd done to me.
I'm fucking starving.
Chapter 28. Present. Preppy. There is one thing you haven't thought of, I said, sitting up as straight as I could. Oh yeah? And what the fuck would that be? Chop asked, crossing his arms over his chest and leaning against the wall with a shit-eating grin on his face. You're a fucked-up individual, I said, pausing to adjust to the sharp pain in my ribs. Is that it? Chop asked, rolling his eyes. I shook my head. No, you didn't let me finish. I pushed against the floor and slipped my ass against the wall, bracing myself into the corner. What you don't seem to understand is that there ain't nothing you can do to me that ain't been done before. You're an amateur. A fucking hack. You think threatening to have me ass-raped is going to break me? I laughed. Think again, cocksucker, 'cause my stepdaddy already had that honor. All you're doing is telling me that you're white trash, like I don't already know. Why don't you shut the fuck up so you can die with a little fucking pride? He said smugly. Come to think of it, maybe I should call him up and invite him over for a visit. Wonder what he's up to these days. He was goading me, using what I'd told him to try and get a rise out of me. Think again, motherfucker. He's just peachy, rotting in the swamp right where I left him, I said without so much as a flinch, even though the pain shooting through my spine was crippling. Chop's face momentarily fell. He pushed off the wall and knelt down beside me. So you killed a man. So what? Should I be impressed? You think some story about your pathetic childhood is going to make me feel bad, and then what? You think I'm just going to let you go? I shook my head. Or at least, I think I did. All the muscles in my neck were numb at that point. No, what you don't seem to understand is that all this is pointless. You can have me ass-raped, and it's not going to break me. You can keep torturing me, but what you don't get is that half that shit makes my dick hard. You can have me killed. I leaned in closer and smiled. But I'm already dead, bitch. Chop reared back and kicked me in the ribs with his heavy steel-toed boot, sending me crashing into the wall beside me, my teeth chattering with the overwhelming pain ripping through my body. Either Chop left without saying a word, or I passed out from the pain and didn't get to hear his last thoughts on what a piece of shit I am. Regardless, when I opened my eyes, I was grateful to find that once again, I was alone. Except, of course, for the woman who couldn't tell me your name. I should have been happy to not be alone. But every word out of her mouth made me cringe, and every time Chop left, she had a comment. You know, provoking him isn't going to make things any easier on you. I've learned that lesson the hard way, she said softly. Hello? I asked, and when she didn't immediately answer, I figured I was just hearing things. So I did what anyone losing their fucking minds would do, and finished out the lyrics to the Lionel Richie song. Hello? Is it me you're looking for? I sang out, grabbing my ribs as every word felt like I was stabbing myself in the gut. But the song needed to be sung, or like a fairy would lose its wing or some shit. I never did like that song, the woman said again, and this time I was positive I wasn't hearing things. Or like, close to positive. Like 40%. Listen, lady, I don't know if you are even real at this point, but if you are real, then I'll forgive your temporary lapse in judgment when it comes to the greatness that is Lionel Richie. Do you ever shut up? She said, annoyed. Yeah, I do this thing when I pass out where my mouth stops running, I said. No, actually, it doesn't. Yesterday you were commentating like you were an announcer over some sort of competition, she huffed. Probably American Ninja Warrior. Always thought I'd be good at that. I adjusted so it didn't feel like I would crack my tailbone under my own weight. Well, now that the pleasantries are out of the way, are you finally going to tell me your name? Names aren't important, she said. Sure they are. My name is Samuel Clearwater, but my friends call me Preppy, I said, although I was pretty sure I'd already introduced myself to this annoying bitch. If you're not going to tell me your name, you can at least describe your tits to me, bra and nipple size, if you please. There was a brief pause. He's not going to kill you, you know. That's disappointing, I said, although it came out as a question. I didn't want to die, but being tortured every single day wasn't exactly on my bucket list either. Chop believes in taking lives, she said, stating the obvious. I kind of got that. He been hitting you in the head? No, you don't get it. There is more power in taking lives than there is in ending them. By keeping us alive and trapped down here like rats, he dictates how we live and if and when we die. And if a situation arises where he can use us, he'll toss our gaunt bodies at the feet of whoever he's trying to intimidate by showing them how much power he really has.
That sounds like a lot of work.
I think you had it wrong when you told him that you're more fucked up than him, she said with a sad sigh. Pray. Meditate. Concentrate on what life was before you came here because Samuel... She paused. Because you're never going to see that life again.
I didn't argue with her. Not just because she'd been there for years and I thought arguing with her would be a waste of energy, but because somewhere, deep inside, I knew she was right.
She went silent shortly after that, and I assumed she fell asleep in whatever hole she was placed in. Without a lot left to keep my mind from torture and death, I closed my eyes and used the simple meditation breathing techniques that Myrna had taught me. I took a few deep breaths, well, as deep as I could without choking to death, and I tried to focus on what life looked like before I was shot. I was happy-ish. I had family. I had respect. What I didn't have was her. Even when I pictured the cast of characters in my life, King, Doe, Bear, and Grace, there was someone else standing further off in the distance, overshadowing the people standing right in front of me. She was overlooking the bay with her back to me, her dark hair blowing around in the wind. She turned around to face me just as I got close, her dark eyes softening when she saw me, her smile tugging at the corners of her plump lips. When she spoke, it made my heart beat faster and I drifted off into a state of semi-consciousness, surrounded by her words echoing in every corner of my brain over and over again on an endless loop of regret. Keep me.
Chapter 29 Preppy. When the doorbell rang, I thought it was Billy, who was supposed to be dropping off some fresh blue crab before I headed out to see Dre. I wanted to take her mind off Myrna, and what better way to do that than a nice homemade crab dinner, followed by my face between her legs and my tongue deep inside her pussy for an undetermined amount of time. When I opened the door, it wasn't Billy. It wasn't even a man. A woman stood on my porch. She had shoulder-length bleach blonde hair, and she smelled of hairspray. Her glossy lips were painted bright pink. She stared up at me with big golden eyes like she was waiting for me to say something. "You're the one that knocked on my door, lady," I said, wondering what the fuck was keeping Billy. The woman adjusted the short-sleeved jacket of her white pantsuit. Gold bangle bracelets slid up and down on her wrist when she moved, clinking together loudly. When she didn't say anything and continued to stare up at me, I raised the volume of my voice and spoke slowly. "Can I help you?" I wasn't sure if she'd blinked. I knew I was a sight to behold, but god fucking damn, lady, I had places to be. Over her shoulder was a shiny white Cadillac SUV. The front window was tinted dark, so I couldn't see anyone in it, but I could hear the engine running. The sunlight glinted off of the humongous rock on her left hand, and I flinched when the beam of light shot me directly in the fucking eye. "Oh, I'm sorry," she said, moving her hand behind her back. "And yes, yes, you can help me. Although the reason I'm here is because I didn't help you."
"But let me guess, Jesus can help me?" I asked, leaning up against the doorframe. "'Cause I gotta tell you, lady, that you should stop before you even start, 'cause you're wasting your time with me. It doesn't matter what kind of God you're selling today, I'm not buying it. I don't need to go to church to know I'm a sinner, and whatever God up there might exist is fully aware of who I am and hasn't struck me down just yet. So the way I see it, me and God have a good thing going, and you know how the saying goes, don't fix it if it ain't broken."
I went to close the door and call Billy to see when I could expect him, when the woman's hand shot out and grabbed on it before it could click shut.
"Samuel, wait!" she shouted.
And that's when the recognition slammed into me head first. It couldn't be. But it was. I opened the door again, taking another look at the woman in front of me.
"Mom?"
"Yes, Samuel,"
she said with a small smile. Happy I recognized her.
"It's me."
I'd been angry a time or two in my life. I'd been confused. I'd been hurt. But I'd never been more murderously irate than I was right then. I balled my fists. The heat of my sudden rage threatened to boil me alive. "Get the fuck off my property," I hissed, taking a step out onto the porch. She had no choice but to drop down to the first step or be trampled. I glared down at her with all the hate that had been festering in my soul for years. "I thought you were dead."
"I'm not,"
she said, her hand shaking.
"Shame."
I deserve that," she said, glancing back at the SUV where an older man in a sport coat got out of the car and buttoned his jacket. "Mitch, it's okay, we're just talking," she called out to him.
"No, we're not. Leave. Now," I demanded.
"That's my husband, Mitch,"
my mom said, pointing back to the man.
"You were always good at ignoring me," I muttered, feeling the pressure build behind my eyes. If she didn't take my warning, things were going to end badly for her.
"Samuel, I'll be quick, I promise. 2 minutes, that's all I want,"
she said, raising her eyebrows and waiting for me to respond. "You have 1 minute," she spoke quickly.
"I came here because it's part of my rehab, to make amends with those I've wronged, and I've wronged you the most."
"No wonder I didn't recognize you. You're sober, never seen that look on you before. And there's no need to make amends. There is only the need to get the fuck out, now."
She dropped down another step, but still didn't leave. 4 years now. 4 years I've been sober.
"Congratulations! Took you 4 fucking years to want to apologize for the shit mom you were?"
I laughed and leaned over. Apology not accepted.
I didn't know what to say to you 4 years ago.
Oh, but you do now? I asked. This should be good. All right, let's hear it,
I said, crossing my arms over my chest and waving for her to continue. I'm sorry, Samuel. I was an addict. Still am, because it's a sickness that never really goes away. I've made some bad choices and I hurt you. I'll never forgive myself, and I don't expect you to either.
You hurt me? You make it sound like you ran over my bicycle.
She took a deep breath, and I could tell she was trying to steady her nerves because her hands shook harder along with her voice. When I left, I didn't know where you were or where you went. I didn't look for you. And for that, I'm sorry. I should have looked for you. I should have come back for you. I shouldn't have left at all, but most of all, I shouldn't have given up on you. I ignored you as if you weren't there, and I don't expect you to want or have a relationship with me, but I thank you for letting me speak my piece. This is for you, she said, taking a small piece of folded-up paper from her pocket. She held it up for me to take, and when I didn't, she set it on the step by my feet and backed down the steps. When she reached the bottom, she turned around and her heel caught in the gravel. She fell sideways, catching the railing to right herself again. She straightened, adjusted her jacket, and was about to head back toward her awaiting car. Suddenly, rage wasn't even a word. I was beyond rage. I was beyond anger. I was something that existed in another fucking realm, and this bitch was not getting away with her half-assed apology.
Fuck that, I said, leaping down the steps and stepping in front of her, cutting her off from the SUV. If you're going to apologize, then you need to know what you should be apologizing for, I said, feeling the fire flaring out of my nostrils as I spoke through gritted teeth. I could strangle her, shoot the motherfucker by the car, and burn them both in the fire pit in the backyard, and still be on time to make Dre dinner.
Possibilities.
You don't get to unburden your soul and walk the fuck away when I can't ever have that same privilege because of you, I yelled. What the fuck do you think was going on while you were doing all that ignoring you're so fucking good at, huh? You saw the bruises, so I know that you know about the beatings. But what you don't know is that while you were too busy forgetting you had a son, Tim didn't forget. In fact, Tim was paying close attention to me, very close.
I was right up in her face when I added, he paid me so much attention that he knew how I liked my dick jerked. He knew what made me come before I even knew.
No,
she said, her eyes going wide. She tried to take a step back, but I closed the distance between us again. There was no way I was going to let her back away from what I had to say.
So much attention that he knew how tight my asshole was, I continued. She wrapped her arms around her stomach. So much that when he was too drunk to come, he'd blame me, then beat me until I passed out.
That's not possible, she whispered, her hand covering her mouth.
It's fucking possible and it fucking happened, I spat. Over and over again it happened. In the very next room, under the same fucking roof. It happened because of you. Because you did nothing to stop it. Because you weren't there or didn't care. So you see, you didn't just ignore me. You forgot you had a son and left me in the hands of a man who I'd wished forgot I was there.
She shook her head in disbelief. And either she really didn't believe me or she was processing the cement truck I'd just dropped on her head. Either way, it was her head shaking from side to side that pushed me over the edge I'd been teetering on. My vision became a blur, and I couldn't see beyond the hatred that was either blinding me or making me see clearer than I ever had before. I pulled my gun out from the front of my pants and pushed the barrel to her forehead. She dropped to her knees.
Son, wait!
The man in the blazer called out, jogging up to us. I cocked the gun and he stopped in his tracks.
Son?
I asked with a laugh. I looked down to my mother who was whimpering.
You might really want to rethink your choice of words there, motherfucker. 'Cause Mama and me aren't exactly having the friendliest of family reunions, so that word makes me a little twitchy.
I tapped the trigger to show him what I meant, and Mitch stopped behind my mother,
raising his arms in surrender. "Put your goddamn hands down, man," I spat. "I'm not robbing. I'm killing. Don't get it twisted." "Please, no," Mitch pled. "Fuck off," I told Mitch. I looked down at the woman before me on her knees, her white pants dirtied by the driveway, and all I wanted for her was to feel what I felt. Live how I lived. "Maybe I'll have one of my biker friends come over and fuck you in the ass in front of your husband," I told her. "Rape you. Take what you don't want to give. Fuck what you don't want fucked. But unlike you, I won't ignore it. I won't turn my back on it. I'll watch. I'll cheer. And I'll fucking rejoice when he splits you in two." My piece of shit mother wailed and shook as one would naturally do when they know they're about to meet their end.
"Samuel, please," she begged.
Her black eye makeup ran down her face, and it seemed fitting that she was crying dirty tears. "You know, Mom," I started, turning the barrel of the gun on her head, tangling it in her hair. "To me, you have never looked better than you do right now, at the end of my gun." Billy's van pulled in the end of the driveway, and he hopped out with the cooler in his arms. He took in the scene in front of him, glancing from me to my gun, to my mom, to Mitch, before landing back on me.
"You can't kill me," my mother stated on a sob. He's a witness."
"Oh yeah?" I asked. "Hey Billy, put the crab in my trunk, will you? I'm leaving here after I take care of this situation." Billy nodded. "No problem, man. You need any help with that?" He jerked his chin to the bitch on her knees. "I got some time before I gotta get the girls from soccer." "I'm straight," I answered. "All righty then," he said, turning toward the garage and whistling as he walked. I kneeled down in front of my mother and shoved the gun under her chin, jerking her chin up to face me. "Something tells me he wouldn't make a very good witness," I pointed out, Billy's whistle still echoing over the house.
"I didn't know,"
my mom wailed.
"I promise I didn't know what was happening, I swear." "That's the fucking problem,"
I shouted, standing back up, my finger leaning heavy against the trigger. Just a little more pressure, and it would be over. She would be over. The burden on my chest would be lifted. Just a few more seconds, and I could make all the things right that she made wrong. But no matter if I killed her a million times over, it couldn't turn back time. It couldn't make her a better mom. It couldn't make Tim unrape a scared and lonely kid. "Go ahead. I deserve it."
"Nancy, no!"
Mitch said, finally lowering his hands. I glanced up at the worry written all over his face. The guy actually seemed to care about the cunt. And suddenly I felt sick to my stomach, not because I didn't want to kill her, I did, but because I wasn't going to. "I want you to think about what I told you. I hope it seeped into that bleached brain of yours. I hope it gives you nightmares and you think about him grunting over my back while you were passed out on the other couch." My mother cried out and her shoulders shook violently. "You both have 10 fucking seconds to get in that car and get off my property before I start firing. Mitch, you make sure this bitch stays far, far away, because if I so much as find out that you have come within 20 miles of me, I will come for you. And I don't care if there are 1,000 witnesses around, I will put a bullet in both of you. But before I do, I'll seek out your friends, your other family, anyone close to you, anyone you know, and I'll end them first so you'll know I'm coming for you. If you don't think I'm serious, all you have to do is cross me and you'll motherfucking find out. You have 10 seconds. I leaned down next to her and ran the gun down her face. Oh, how it would be so easy. "Run, bitch!" I shouted in her ear. She stumbled, falling backwards on the gravel. Mitch rushed to her aid, picking her up by her elbows and practically dragging her to the car as she ran and she struggled to keep up. The tires spun as they fishtailed down the driveway. I ran after them, aimed my gun, and fired several bullets into their bumper before falling to my knees on the road. As their SUV drove out of sight, it looked as if they were being swallowed up by a black hole that grew bigger and bigger until they were gone, and there was nothing at all.
Chapter 30. Dre. When Billy came over and told me what he'd seen over at Preppy's, I wasted no time hopping in Myrna's car. It was the second time I'd been behind a wheel in years, but the dread I once felt toward driving was an afterthought, far behind the one that told me I had to get to Preppy as soon as possible. I hadn't put too much thought into where he lived, so I didn't know what I was expecting to see when I pulled up to the address Billy had given me. But the three-story stilt home, towering over the smooth waters of the bay, was not it. There wasn't too much time to linger on the view, or on the siding in much need of repair, or the overgrown plant beds, because a crash sounded from somewhere inside the house and I bolted from the car, leaving the engine running and the door open. I tried the front door, but it was locked. I banged on the screen, ringing the doorbell several times over, but my only answer was the squawking of a bird from a nearby tree. I attempted to open the window, but it didn't budge. I hopped off the porch and darted around the back of the house, taking two steps at a time, losing my flip-flops in the process. The back door was not only unlocked, but had been left partially open. "Preppy?" I asked, pushing open the door so hard it slammed against the wall with a thud. I darted from room to room, finding them all empty. It was dark and musty, the curtains all drawn and not a single light was on. The smell of weed and something sinister hung heavy in the air. The shag carpet was old and stiff, stabbing the bottoms of my bare feet as I jogged down the hallway, stopping in front of a closed door when I heard movement from within. "Preppy!" I called out, jiggling the handle, but it didn't budge. When there was no answer, I ran back to the kitchen and searched for something I could use to unlock it. I grabbed a knife from a drawer, but dropped it when my eyes locked on the bar stools. I darted around the corner, picked one up, and lugged it down the hall. I didn't stop at the door, but instead used every bit of my forward momentum to hurl the stool against it. Over and over again, I bashed the legs of the stool into the door, splintering the wood around the handle, until I made a hole large enough to fit a couple of my fingers through, the jagged wood slicing my skin, as I felt around for the lock and flipped it open. I wasted no time opening the door. I tried to prepare myself for the worst. The worst was exactly what I found. One look at him was all it took to realize how wrong I'd been. The spark I'd seen in his eyes that first night wasn't the sign of a monster. It wasn't the glint of an evil man. It was a warning. A warning that he'd been hurt and had never healed. It was the anger and the fear of his past lurking just beyond the surface, waiting for him to finally break. And break he did. The room was dark except for the green lava lamp on the bedside, and a small reading lamp that was turned over onto the floor, blinking on and off. Preppy was pacing the room shirtless. His jeans were open and hanging low on his hips, his belt dangling from the loops. His hair was disheveled. He carried a bottle of whiskey by the neck in one hand, a lit cigarette in the other.
"Why?"
he asked. The pain in his voice cut through me, sharper than any knife. He kicked the closet door in with his foot, sending it careening off the hinges. "Preppy," I said softly, taking a tentative step toward him. "Preppy, it's me. Dre. Doc." I stopped at the foot of the bed as he continued to pace. And although I was right there, it was like he couldn't see me, his eyes glazed over. He let a cigarette fall onto the carpet, and immediately I stomped it out with my foot before it could catch fire. He threw the bottle into the bathroom, where it smashed the mirror into pieces, sending shards of glass shooting around the room like shrapnel. He pushed down his jeans and took his soft cock in hand, stroking up and down angrily. "Preppy, it's me," I said again, taking another step toward him. There was no fucking way I was leaving him in that condition. I was either going to find a way to drag him out of it, or we were going down together.
Go away!
He barked, his voice a strangled cry.